Chapter 2. New Orleans, May 1857. Sour Billy Tipton arrived at the French Exchange just after 10 and watched them auction 4 casks of wine, 7 crates of dry goods, and a shipment of furniture before they brought in the slaves. He stood silently, elbows up against the long marble bar that extended halfway around the rotunda, sipping an absinthe while he observed the encanteurs hawk their wares in 2 languages. Sour Billy was a dark, cadaverous man, his long horse face scarred by the pox he'd had as a boy, his hair thin and brown and flaky. He seldom smiled, and he had frightening, ice-coloured eyes. Those eyes, those cold and dangerous eyes, were Sour Billy's protection. The French Exchange was a grand place, altogether too grand for his tastes, and for a fact he did not like to come there. It was in the rotunda of the St. Louis Hotel, beneath a towering dome from which daylight cascaded down onto auction block and bidders. The dome was 80 feet across, easily. Tall pillars circled the room, galleries ran round the inside of the dome, the ceiling was elaborate and ornamental, the walls were covered with odd paintings, the bar was solid marble, the floor was marble, the desks of the encanteurs were marble. The patrons were as fine as the decor. Rich planters from upriver, and young Creole dandies from the old city. Sour Billy loathed the Creoles, them with their rich clothes and haughty ways and dark, contemptuous eyes. He did not like to go among them. They were hot-blooded and quarrelsome, much given to dueling, and sometimes one of the young ones would take offence at Sour Billy, at the way he mangled their language and looked at their women, at the disreputable, scruffy, presumptuous Americanness of him. But then they would catch sight of his eyes, pale and staring and edged with malice, and, often as not, they would turn away. Still, left to his own devices, he'd do his nigger buying over at the American Exchange in the St. Charles, where manners were less refined, English was spoken in place of French, and he felt less out of place. The grandeur of the rotunda in the St. Louis did not impress him, except for the quality of the drinks they served. He came there once a month, nonetheless, and had no choice about it. The American Exchange was a good place to buy a field hand or a cook, dark-skinned as you please, but for a fancy girl, one of the young, dusky, octoroon beauties that Julian preferred, you had to come to the French Exchange. Julian wanted beauty, insisted on beauty. Sour Billy did as Damon Julian told him. It was about 11 when the last of the wine was cleared away, and the traders began to bring in their merchandise from the slave pens on Morrow and Esplanade and Common Streets. Men and women, old and young, and children too, a disproportionate number of them light of skin and fair of face. Intelligent as well, Sour Billy knew, probably French-speaking. They were lined up along one side of the room for inspection, and several of the young Creole men walked along the road jauntily, making light comments to one another and viewing today's stock at close hand. Sour Billy stayed by the bar and ordered another absinthe. He had visited most of the yards yesterday, looked over what there was to offer. He knew what he wanted. One of the auctioneers brought down a mallet on his marble desk, and at once the patrons ceased their conversation and turned to give him their attention. He gestured, and a young woman of about 20 climbed unsteadily to the top of a nearby crate. She was a slight quadroon with wide eyes, pretty in her way. She wore a calico dress and had green ribbons in her hair, and the auctioneer began singing her praises effusively. Sour Billy watched with his interest, while 2 young Creoles bid her up. She was finally sold for some $1,400. Next, an older woman, said to be a fine cook, was auctioned off, and then a young mother with 2 children, all sold together. Sour Billy waited through several other sales. It was 9:15, and the French Exchange was jammed with bidders and spectators when the item he had chosen came up. Her name was Emily, the encanteur told them. "Look at her, sirs," he babbled in French. "Just look at her, such perfection! It has been years since such a lot has been sold here. Years, and it will be years before we see another like her." Sour Billy was inclined to agree. Emily was 16 or 17, he judged, but already very much a woman. She looked a little frightened up on the auction block, but the dark simplicity of her dress set off her figure to good advantage, and she had a beautiful face. Big, soft eyes and fine café au lait skin. Julian will like this one. The bidding was spirited. The planters had no use for such a fancy girl, but 6 or 7 of the Creoles were hot after her. No doubt the other slaves had given Emily some idea what might be in store for her. She was pretty enough to get her freedom in time, and to be kept by one of those fine Creole dandies in a little house on Rampart Street, at least until he married. She'd go to the quadroon balls in the Orleans ballroom, wear silk gowns and ribbons, be the cause of more than one duel. Her daughters would have skin even lighter and grow into the same fine life. Maybe when she got old she'd learn to dress hair or run a boarding house. Sour Billy sipped at his drink, cold-faced. The bids rose. By $2,000, all but three of the bidders had fallen out. At that point, one of them, a swarthy, bald-headed man, demanded that she be stripped. The encounter snapped a curt command, and Emily gingerly undid her dress and stepped out of it. Someone shouted up a lewd compliment that drew a round of laughter from the audience. The girl smiled weakly, while the auctioneer grinned and added a comment of his own. Then the bidding resumed. At $2,500, the bald-headed man dropped out, having gotten his look. That left two bidders, both Creoles. They topped one another three times in succession, forcing the price up to $3,200. Then came the hesitation. The auctioneer coaxed a final bid from the younger of the two men. $3,300.
$3,400,
his opponent said quietly. Sour Billy recognized him. He was a lean young Creole named Montreuil, a notorious gambler and duelist. The other man shook his head. The auction was over. Montreuil was smirking at Emily with anticipation. Sour Billy waited three heartbeats until the mallet was about to fall. Then he set aside his absinthe glass and said,
$3,700,
in a loud, clear voice. Encanteur and girl both looked up in surprise. Montreuil and several of his friends gave Billy dark, threatening looks.
$3,800,
Montreuil said.
$4,000,
said Sour Billy. It was a high price, even for such a beauty. Montreuil said something to two men standing near him, and the three of them suddenly spun on their heels and strode from the rotunda without another word, their footsteps ringing angrily on the marble.
It seems like I won the auction,
Sour Billy said.
Get her dressed and ready to go.
The others were all staring at him.
But of course,
the encanteur said. Another auctioneer rose at his desk and with his mallet summoned yet another fancy girl to the attention of the crowd, and the French exchange began to buzz again. Sour Billy Tipton led Emily down the long arcade from the rotunda to St. Louis Street, past all the fashionable shops where idlers and wealthy travellers gave them curious looks. As he stepped out into daylight, blinking at the glare, Montreuil came up beside him.
Monsieur, he began.
Talk English, you want to talk to me?
Sour Billy said sharply.
It's Mr. Tipton out here, Montreal.
His long fingers twitched, and he fixed the other with his cold, ice eyes.
Mr. Tipton, Montreuil said in a flat, unaccented English. His face was vaguely flushed. Behind him his two companions stood stiffly.
I have lost girls before, the Creole said. She is striking, but it is nothing losing her. But I take offense at the way you bid, Mr. Tipton. You made a mockery of me in there, taunting me with victory and playing me for a fool.
Well, well, Sour Billy said. Well, well.
You play a dangerous game, Montreuil warned.
Do you know who I am? If you were a gentleman, I would call you out, sir. Dueling's illegal, Montreuil,
Sour Billy said.
And you heard? And I'm no gentleman.
He turned back to the quadroon girl who was standing up near the wall of the hotel, watching them.
Come,
he said. He walked off down the sidewalk and she followed.
You shall be paid in kind for this, monsieur,
Montreuil called after him. Sour Billy paid him no mind and turned a corner. He walked briskly, a swagger in his step that had been absent inside the French exchange. The streets were where Sour Billy felt at home. There he had grown up, there he had learned to survive. The slave girl Emily scurried after him as best she could, her bare feet pounding on the brick sidewalks. The streets of the Vieux Carré were lined with brick and plaster houses, each with its graceful wrought-iron balcony overhanging the narrow walk, fancy as you please. But the roads themselves were unpaved, and the recent rains had turned them into a sea of mud. Along the walks were open gutters, deep ditches of cypress full of standing water, fragrant with filth and raw sewage. They passed neat little shops and slave pens with heavily barred windows, past elegant hotels and smoky grog shops full of surly free niggers, past close, humid alleys and airy courtyards, each with its well or fountain, past haughty Creole ladies with their escorts and chaperones, and a gang of runaway slaves in iron collars and chains cleaning the gutters, under the careful watch of a hard-eyed white man with a whip. Shortly they passed out of the French Quarter entirely, into the rawer, newer American section of New Orleans. Sour Billy had left his horse tied up outside a grog shop. He mounted it, and told the girl to walk along beside him. They struck out south from the city, and soon left the main road, stopping only once, briefly, so Sour Billy could rest his horse and eat some of the dry, hard bread and cheese in his saddleback. He let Emily suck up some water from a stream. "Are you my new massa, sir?" she asked him then, in remarkably good English.
"Overseer," said Sour Billy. "You'll meet Julian tonight, girl, after dark."
He smiled.
"He'll like you."
Then he told her to shut up. Since the girl was afoot, their pace was laggardly, and it was near dusk when they reached the Julian plantation. The road ran along the bayou and wound through a thick stand of trees, limbs heavy with Spanish moss. They rounded a large, barren oak and came out into the fields red-tinged in the sombre light of the setting sun. They lay fallow and overgrown from the water's edge to the house. There was an old rotting wharf and a woodyard along the bayou for passing steamers, and behind the great house a row of slave shanties. But there were no slaves, and the fields had not been worked in some years. The house was not large as plantation houses go, nor particularly grand. It was a stolid, square structure of greying wood, paint flaking from its sides, its only striking aspect a high tower with a widow's walk around it.
"Home," said Sour Billy.
The girl asked if the plantation had a name.
"Used to," Sour Billy said. "Years ago when Garou owned it. But he took sick and died, him and all his fine sons. Don't got no name now. Now shut your mouth and hurry."
He led her around back to his own entrance and opened the padlock with a key he wore on a chain around his neck. He had three rooms of his own in the servants' portion of the house. He pulled Emily into the bedroom.
"Get out of them clothes," Sir Billy snapped.
The girl fumbled to obey, but looked at him with fear in her eyes.
"Don't look like that," he said. "You're Julian's. I ain't going to mess with you. I'll be heating some water. There's a tub in the kitchen. You wash the filth off you and dress."
He threw open a wardrobe of intricately carved wood, pulled out a dark brocade gown.
"Here, this'll fit."
She gasped.
"I can't wear nothing like that. That's a white lady's dress."
"You shut your mouth and do like I tell you," Sour Billy said. "Julian wants you pretty, girl."
Then he left her and went through into the main part of the house. He found Julian in the library, sitting quietly in darkness in a great leather chair, a brandy snifter in his hand. All around him, covered with dust, were the books that had belonged to old René Garou and his sons. None of them had been touched in years. Damon Julian was not a reader. Sour Billy entered and stood a respectful distance away, silent until Julian spoke.
"Well," the voice from the darkness asked at last.
4,000, Sour Billy said. "But you like her. A young one, nice and tender, beautiful, real beautiful."
"The others will be here soon. Alain and Jean are here already, the fools. The thirst is on them. Bring her to the ballroom when she's ready."
"Yes," Sour Billy said quickly. "There was trouble at the auction, Mr. Julian."
"Trouble?"
"A Creole sharper by the name of Montreal. He wanted her too, didn't like being outbid. Think he might get curious. He's a gambler, seen a lot round the gaming rooms. Want me to take care of him some night?"
"Tell me about him," Julian commanded.
His voice was liquid, soft and deep and sensuous, rich as a fine cognac.
"Young, dark, black eyes, black hair, tall. Duelist, they say. Hard man, strong and lean, but he's got a pretty face like so many of them do."
"I will see to him," Damon Julian said.
"Yes, sir," said Sour Billy Tipton.
He turned and went back to his rooms. Emily was transformed when she slipped into the brocade gown. Slave and child alike vanished. Washed and dressed properly, she was a woman of dark, almost ethereal beauty. Sour Billy inspected her carefully.
"You'll do," he said. "Come, you're going to a ball."
The ballroom was the largest and grandest chamber in the house, lit by three huge cut-glass chandeliers burning with 100 tiny candles. Bayou landscapes done in rich oils hung on the walls, and the floors were beautifully polished wood. At one end of the room, wide double doors opened out onto a foyer. At the other, a great staircase rose and branched off to either side, its banisters gleaming. They were waiting when Sour Billy led her in. 9 of them were on hand, including Julian himself. 6 men, 3 women. The men in dark suits of European cut, the women in pale silken gowns. Except for Julian, they waited on the staircase, still and silent, respectful. Sour Billy knew them all. The pale women who called themselves Adrienne and Cynthia and Valerie. Dark, handsome Raymond with the boy's face. Kurt, whose eyes burned like hot coals. All the others. One of them, Jean, trembled slightly as he waited, his lips pulled back from long white teeth, his hand moving in small spasms. The thirst was on him badly, but he did not act. He waited for Damon Julian. All of them waited for Damon Julian. Julian walked across the ballroom to the slave girl Emily. He moved with the stately grace of a cat. He moved like a lord, like a king. He moved like darkness flowing, liquid and inevitable. He was a dark man, somehow, though his skin was very pale. His hair was black and curling, his clothing somber, his eyes glittering flint. He stopped before her and smiled. Julian had a charming, sophisticated smile. "Exquisite," he said simply. Emily blushed and stammered. "Shut up," Sour Billy told her sharply. "Don't you talk unless Mr. Julian tells you to." Julian ran his finger along one soft, dark cheek, and the girl trembled and tried to stand still. He stroked her hair languidly, then raised her face towards his and let his eyes drink from her own. At that, Emily shied and cried out with alarm, but Julian placed his hands on either side of her face and would not let her look away. "Lovely," he said. "You are beautiful, child. We appreciate beauty here, all of us." He released her face, took one of her small hands in his own, raised it and turned it over and bowed to plant a soft kiss on the inside of her wrist. The slave girl was still shaking, but she did not resist. Julian turned her slightly and gave her arm to Sour Billy Tipton. "Will you do the honours, Billy?" Sour Billy reached behind him and pulled the knife from the sheath in the small of his back. Emily's dark eyes bulged wide and frightened, and she tried to pull away, but he had a firm grip on her, and he was fast, very fast. The blade had scarcely come into view, and suddenly it was wet, a single swift slash across the inside of her wrist where Julian had planted his lips. Blood welled from the wound and began to drip onto the floor, the patters loud in the stillness of the ballroom. Briefly, the girl whimpered. But before she quite knew what was happening, Sour Billy had sheathed his knife and stepped away, and Julian had taken her hand again. He raised her slim arm up once more and bent his lips to her wrist and began to suck. Sour Billy retreated to the door. The others left the stair and came closer, the women's gowns whispering softly. They stood in a hungry circle about Julian and his prey, their eyes dark and hot. When Emily lost consciousness, Sour Billy sprang forward and caught her beneath the arms, supporting her. She weighed almost nothing at all. "Such beauty," Julian muttered when he broke free of her, lips moist, eyes heavy and sated. He smiled. "Please, Damon," implored the one called Jean, shaking like a man with the fever. Blood ran slowly, darkly down Emily's arm as Julian gave Jean a cold, malignant stare. "Valerie," he said. "You are next." The pale young woman with the violet eyes and yellow gown came forward, knelt daintily and began to lick at the terrible flow. Not until she had licked the arm clean did she press her mouth to the open wound. Raymond went next, by Julian's leave, then Adrienne, then Jorge. Finally, when the others were done, Julian turned to Jean with a smile and a gesture. He fell on her with a stifled sob, wrenching her from Sour Billy's embrace, and began to tear at the soft flesh of her throat. Damon Julian grimaced with distaste. "When he is done," he told Sour Billy, "clean it up."